Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. Todd Albaugh, along with our engineer and producer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, the fantastic and talented Mr. Zommers at that. It is a Friday, the last day of July. July 31st.
It is not Friday, though.
Did I say Friday?
I think you did, or else one of us zoned out. Either you zoned out and said Friday, or I zoned out and thought you said Friday.
Here's the deal. I'm a little distracted, and let me tell you why. So I set this all. I'm very excited that Trevor from Bradbury Coffee is going to be here at the bottom of the hour, and I thought, well, here would be a cool little fun idea that I would bring in my pour-over stuff, my Chemex, and I went over to Trevor's shop, Bradbury's, and bought this beautiful Phil and Sebastian Coffee Roasters coffee last week. And I thought, well, I'll bring in all my stuff, and we'll brew up coffee on the air, and we'll talk coffee while we're having coffee, right? So during the break, I went to set everything up so that it would be all ready when Trevor got here. And I managed to bring everything except for the specialty filters that go in my Chemex pour over. You can't see it on the stream, but there you go. Beautiful little vessel, glass vessel. But we have no proper filters.
Yeah.
So the question is, do I go get like some bad filters? Like Mr. Coffee filters, which might kind of work, but not really. We're being joined by, this is making my life so much happier. This is the highlight of my day, because things are going wrong on here. We forget our coffee filters, but by golly, who has come in the door but our very own colleague, Phil D. How about that? That's fantastic.
How you doing? Greetings from Richland Center.
Philly, you're here from we just gave away some Milwaukee Brewers tickets, as a matter of fact.
Awesome.
And mentioned for people that like the Brewers in Southwest Wisconsin, they can listen on WRCE, AM 1450, and FM 107.7.
Indeed, they can. We've been carrying the Brewers since their inaugural year in Wisconsin in 1970.
That's fantastic. Yep. And that was where I got my start, literally engineering Brewer games back in 1987, RCE.
Listening to Euchre, and at that time it was probably Pat Hughes.
Yeah, the great Pat Hughes, now for the Chicago Cubs.
Going into the Frick Hall of Fame.
I saw that, the Broadcasting Hall of Fame. Yeah. He's fantastic, though.
Yeah, he is. He's awesome.
I know I tried to kind of model myself when back in college and use some of the same thing, the same cadence that he did. Indeed. Did you ever do that as a broadcaster?
Oh, yes.
People you listen to, not that you're mimicking them, but you kind of use that same cadence.
Sure. As a fledgling broadcaster, who didn't say, get up, get out of here, gone, when they were trying to call a home run? Bob Euchre is such a treasure.
Right?
We are so lucky that we have had him all these years in the state. 89 years old.
Is that incredible?
And he's still sharp. It's just amazing.
He could run for president.
Well, in Wisconsin, he'd win, wouldn't he? Oh,
can you imagine that? Euchre as an independent would clean house. It would be all over.
Start the campaign right here, maybe.
In Platteville, went there with their very first game that I wasn't supposed to broadcast. Somebody got sick and I got thrown into on the air. I was terrible. I was doing play-by-play, and I just completely ripped off Chris Berman. He could go all the way.
Well, it's a sincerest flattery, right? It's a sincerest form of whatever it is.
If that broadcast exists, but Clark Gilson still has it over there in Boscobel, it should be destroyed.
We may have some tapes at WRCO of the great Todd Albaugh back in the...
The flood didn't take care of those.
90s? No. They're probably on reel-to-reel, but I think we have a few.
What brings you to our lovely burg here?
Just visiting. We had some things to deliver, and then we're doing a few errands in Madison while we're here, and then we're going to fly back.
I heard you guys are doing a little bit of an auction. Can people get in on this action now? There's an auction for a good cause. Tell them what it is. And then you gave away a baseball today. Talk about that.
Right. It was the Ithaca Championship Baseball signed by the team and the coaches. They won the Division IV State Championship. We're giving away a few things all week long on WRCO by bid, of course. Right. We made nearly $500 this morning on the opening day for just a couple of items. And it's the pregame show for the big live auction, which is going to happen Saturday night in Richland Center at the Phoenix Center Bowling Alley. But we're going to be leading up to that live auction with a few things this week, some unique items, including that baseball, some things that maybe, you know, they're priceless, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's for Walk with Grace. Tell folks, if they're not familiar from Southwest Wisconsin, what Walk with Grace is.
So they formed this 20 years ago. It's the 20th anniversary. Mm-hmm. Greater Richland Area Cancer Elimination. Mm-hmm. And they raise money for local cancer patients and their families. And what they do is somebody has a cancer journey they're going through. They apply for funds. Mm-hmm. And the Grace Board, if they're chosen, they give them gas vouchers, because where we're at, they have to go to either Madison or La Crosse. So gas vouchers, they have paid light bills before. They've paid, you know, mortgages. Yeah. They help out. If somebody is down on their luck, they can apply up to three times during their cancer journey. So, and the money, again, stays at home. It's one of the rare organizations that we can say that with.
And I know your wife has been a past co-chairman. She unfortunately had a battle of cancer, but she beat it and is doing well now, as far as I know. And just an inspiration to me, I don't know, to a lot of others. I don't know anybody who isn't touched by cancer in some way. And this is a great local effort. $5 million, I heard, so far in 20 years been raised.
Yeah, they just continue to amaze. You know, last year, I think, you know, of course, after COVID, it was down a little bit. But last year, again, they were back up to about $200,000 raised in the year, which
is incredible.
You know, a town of 5,000, a county of 17,000. Yeah. We're pretty proud of that.
It should be. And for all the things we hear about the world's going to heck in a handbasket, this is one example where it sure isn't. And again, WRCO.com. People can get in on the action there if they want.
Yep. 10 until noon. They're on the WRCO Facebook page. You can check out the items.
Phil Nee from WRCO, WRCE. Back with more after this. This is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network, and it's the Todd Allball Show for a Monday, the 31st of July, 2023. Glad to have Phil Nee in here. What a cool surprise is that? One of our colleagues, one of my longtime friends, first got into radio back in 1987. Phil had already been at it for 3 or 4 years. So, great to have Phil Nee here from RCO. And again, if you are interested in bidding on these cool items for Grace, great local organization in Southwest Wisconsin. I'm not trying to take anything away from national organizations. They do fine work as well. But if you're like me, we talked about campaign money earlier. I like to give money when I do. You know, right now, I don't have a lot to give. Let's be honest about that. But when I do give money, I like to have it go to the local, whatever it is. I want it to be used locally. And Walk with Grace is one of those kind of organizations. If you want to give money and know that the dollars are spent in the community to get people to their radiation treatments, to get them groceries or pay their rent or pay their mortgage bills, to get them through this devastating part. Because again, sadly, who among us in some way, shape, or form have not been touched by cancer, or one of our loved ones has been touched by cancer? And here's a way to actually keep your money, not just in Wisconsin, but in a local community in Wisconsin. Go to WRCO.com, look for Walk with Grace. You can bid on these auction items, help out, and be a part of it. Really, really a great organization. And I'm happy to have Phil Nee. I had no idea he was coming, so it was great to have him stop in and see him here. He's a man about town, that Phil Nee. Great to have you along as well. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Trevor. Todd will finally figure out after several years how to pronounce his last name. Trevor, the owner of Bradbury's here in Madison. And again, I think, you know, we'll get into this later, but I got into coffee myself for a while. Been passionate about it for years. And it's tough to explain sometimes to people who think, well, what's the difference? Coffee is coffee. Well, at the bottom of the hour, Trevor is going to walk us through it. We're going to tell you what the difference is about coffee.
And I will say, if you have some of those people in your life, I'm so sorry. But also, To which I'm talking about people who say coffee is coffee.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about cancer.
I figured that's why. From your reaction,
I had a blank look. I'm like, what is he going? What's he? All right. Got it. About coffee. It's just like coffee is coffee. Yeah.
It's not true. It just isn't.
I know it's not.
I brought some really nice beans home for my roommates who are coffee drinkers because one of them was drinking Folgers. And now he can't go back.
Right?
He doesn't even like take the time to do a pour over or a French press. He's still just putting it in the percolator, but it still makes you got to have good beans and good technique. They both make
good
a big
water.
Difference.
Good.
That is also important.
Coffee is like 98% water. So you don't be using the tap water. Buy yourself either like a water zero thing or a Brita or a Culligan or bottled water, whatever. Good water is critical to good coffee. So we'll be talking to Trevor about that at the bottom of the hour. Looking forward to having him on the show. Right now, I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in Florida. The right wing's war on freedom of thought. Who'd have thought it? Down in Puddin' Finger Land, otherwise known as Florida, the new state law banned telling the truth in public colleges and universities. Governor Ron DeSantis is waging a war on woke. And now professors and instructors are forbidden from explaining to students how systemic racism is, quote, inherent in the institutions of the United States. Under Florida's Senate Bill 226 law, if a teacher dares to inform their students about the laws and institutions that were designated, quote, to maintain social, political, and economic inequities, unquote, that teacher can be fired or fined or imprisoned. Republicans in Florida and in other red states are pushing laws to silence the truth and then over time erase and replace the truth. The simple truth is that African Americans have faced oppression in the United States. It's not new for those in power to suppress histories of their own nation when it doesn't fit their ideology. It happens in authoritarian states like China and Russia. Happens in illiberal democracies like Poland, Hungary, and Turkey. Happening right now with democratically elected leaders in Florida, right here in the United States of America. First, they invent a fake threat. Taps into anxieties, fears, hatreds. Then they attack. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. Let's go to Russia. Vladimir Putin used his people's deep hatred of Nazism dating to World War II. He fabricated a threat of Nazis in Ukraine. And that became his reason for a brutal war. Completely making stuff up. Another example, Turkey. College teachers spoke out about the government's violence against its Kurdish citizens. The president, Erdogan, labeled them, quote unquote, terrorists. 10 academics were imprisoned. Example 3 is right here in the U.S., in Florida. The invented threat is, quote unquote, wokeness. Wokeness by academics is now a crime. If you point out a shameful historical truth, your label is unpatriotic or a pervert or a terrorist or woke. After stoking enough fear and anger, leaders can control speech and criminalize critical discussions of history. Citizens will actually welcome state censorship. Want some examples? Here's a couple. Russia has quote-unquote memory laws that prevent spreading knowledge of history, such as former Soviet leader Joseph Stalin's massive crimes. Look at Poland. Also has memory laws as well. 5 years ago, leaders added a gag order on admitting that many of Poland's leaders and many Polish people were complicit in the Holocaust. Turkey made a crime to acknowledge the nation's genocide on Armenians a century ago. In Turkey, more than 6,000 university instructors have been fired in the effort to silence this critical teaching of that nation's history. And now Florida Senate Bill 266 was made intentionally vague in order to intimidate teachers from, for example, explaining how Jim Crow laws denied equal rights to African Americans. Let's not forget Hitler. Used America's Jim Crow laws as a model for laws to strip German Jewish citizenship of their civil rights. Those out to erase the truth of history also work hard to rewrite history to oppose their ideology. In Russia, Putin wrote a screed in which he claimed that the Ukrainian people and the Russian people are actually one and the same. It was just more false propaganda for his war on Ukraine. And the second example is in Florida. Those who talk about reckoning with America's history of oppressing blacks are accused of, quote unquote, indoctrination. Florida's Don't Say Gay law and its new whitewashing of American history taught in sixth grade social studies are examples of efforts to rewrite history. The truth? The truth is that Ron DeSantis and his ilk are waging war on freedom of thought in the United States of America. Go to the phone lines. About 5 minutes left before the bottom of the hour break. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Mark in the sack. Let's go to you, sir. What say you?
Yeah, heaven forbid we actually know a little bit of the truth, what's going on in this country, as well over in the former Soviet bloc, that they're trying to reclaim a lot of it. Because even in our Federalist Papers, it mentions the Commonwealth that was Poland, the Baltic states in Ukraine were part of a commonwealth up until about 1795, 1798, when it finally got busted up by an expansionist Russia. And it is just, just more propaganda. They were separate people. The languages may be similar, but they're different. I mean, there's a separate Ukrainian Orthodox Church and a Russian Orthodox Church. They're two separate churches. Mm. It is just... And here in this country, I mean, what benefit did whipped Peter get from his whipping? I mean, did Ron DeSantis maintain all that made him a better human being because his master disciplined him and made sure he was a well-behaved slave that rather than somebody who rebelled against the master's orders? I mean, it is just these guys need to be called up and. The fact of the matter is the fact that Wisconsin Republicans aren't standing up and condemning what is going on down in Florida
right.
with this language. Coming out to say that this is wrong, we can't have this, because half the Republicans now, I think, in Wisconsin that are in our legislature would think Wisconsin fought for the Confederacy rather than for the Union.
Difficult, Mark, about just saying, you know what? Slavery was an atrocity and an abomination, and it's full stop. I mean, at least I saw Nikki Haley, who's running for president herself, former governor. At least she, speaking of Ron DeSantis, said, you know what? He should just come out and say, look, slavery was an atrocity, period. I mean, at least I'll give Nikki Haley credit. She could at least do that. But why can't these other Republicans just do that, Mark?
Just no courage at all. I mean, let's face it, that even reading arguments at the Constitutional Convention, there's even slaveholders at the Constitutional Convention. They couldn't get rid of slavery, but they said, well, yeah, it's wrong, but we just can't afford to do it, in spite of the language from some that were condemning slavery.
Mm.
But it just is the fact that these guys do not have the courage. They do not have the political courage to come up and say that this is wrong. And that's it goes right to the core of their character.
Right.
If you can't say that slavery was wrong, then... what good are you?
Yeah, it's a pretty simple. I mean, it's even to me, it's even more simple, easier to answer that question than it is. Hey, was the 2020 election fair? To me, they're equally as stark. But my goodness gracious, if you cannot simply say that slavery was wrong, there's nothing good about it. If you can't say that sentence, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, I don't know. They had something on. I was up late last night. This one had something on Stone Mountain down in Georgia there. And the whole screed that this was, into the 20th century, after, I guess, Birth of the Nation in 1915 kind of reactivated the Klan and reactivated the attitude of the South, and it just, that the Lost Cause and the noble fight for liberty that they were actually fighting is just lays aside the whole thing that in the founding of the Confederacy, they talked, that there was a man reading through some of the documentation of what was happening at the Confederate Constitutional Convention, and slavery was at the core of the Confederacy.
Right.
That's what it was going to be on the back of the slave, like other societies in the past have. Ancient Sparta, even ancient Greece, Athens had it. They're based on slaves. They're more slaves than actual citizens.
Mark, I don't mean to cut you off, but we got to break them up here. Always appreciate listening. A great perspective, great call. Mark from the SAC, thank you so much for calling in and listening. Stay tuned now. I'm going to talk coffee on the other side of the break with this Mr. Zomers and Trevor from Bradbury's as well. This is the Todd Oliveall Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is the Todd Oliveall Show on the Civic Media Network. It is Mr. Aaron Zomers on the board, our producer and engineer. You on the radios or on your Civic Media app. If you don't have the app, go to your favorite app store, download it, type in Civic, C-I-V-I-C, the Civic Media app, and you can take us with you wherever you go throughout the state of Wisconsin or around the world. Glad to have our next guest here in studio. And this is going to be, it's going to be fantastic anyway. But here's a guy that shares my passion for coffee, and I thought this would be great. We'll brew up some coffee together while we talk about coffee. And I forgot my filter at home. But he is Trevor Green. I was saying it right before. I know, see? Thank you, Aaron. But I turned out I was much closer. I panicked because I've known you for a number of years. You've been an inspiration to me personally in the coffee industry. And it is green.
It's green, yeah. All just right. Like the color, yeah.
All right, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Trevor, great to have you here. You own Bradbury's Coffee here in downtown Madison. You are a past U.S. barista competitor.
Yeah.
You know a lot about coffee, and it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Oh, it's a pleasure. When we moved downtown, because we've been on University Avenue, kind of by Hilldale.
Yeah.
And when we moved our new headquarters downtown, I said, this is fantastic because now I can walk to Bradbury and get coffee.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's been great to see you in there on a regular basis.
So how long have you owned Bradbury here in Madison?
Let's see. So I've owned it for about 6 years now.
Have you been in the industry, though, for how long?
I think it's been about 17 years now.
Yeah,
I had to think about that. I've been involved with Bradbury's for a little bit longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've been running it for about, I would say, 8 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first time I started working shifts was back at the end of 2010.
Wow.
So it goes back.
It goes back a ways, right?
It does.
So I actually don't know. Did you grow up around Madison, or where are you from originally?
I'm from Milwaukee originally.
Oh,
yeah. Right. Yeah. And I've been in Madison for about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what led you to get involved in coffee or to think that you wanted to get into this industry?
Well, I mean, initially it was like cool. Mm-hmm. Right? Being a barista is cool.
Sure, of course.
And I was in college in Milwaukee, and it was a flexible job scheduling-wise. So that's kind of how it started. And I would say I probably didn't get super interested or passionate about coffee until after I moved to Madison. And I got involved with the JBC guys. They're another local roaster in Madison, for people who don't know. And I had some experiences tasting coffees there and just being around those guys and Mike Johnson, the dude who started the company, that felt like eye-opening, kind of like radicalizing experiences made me interested.
Michael's helped a lot of people, certainly helped me over the years as well. And again, JBC, a great roaster here in Madison. What was your first coffee gig? Where was the first place you were a barista?
Yeah, in Stone Milwaukee? Creek.
Really, a Stone Creek?
You know Stone Creek?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I found them early on where they just had, I think, their very first shop.
Yeah.
Great guys.
Yeah, in Whitefish Bay. Yeah. Back then they were like pretty different from how they are now. Mm-hmm. They were, they started in the 90s. And when I was working there, it was all pretty dark,
mm-hmm.
pretty like lower scoring coffee is pretty dark. So it was like, it was a different version of coffee than they are now, or like the kind of coffee that we're probably into. And I think around 10 years ago, they kind of rebranded and kind of changed their approach to quality and stuff. And,
Yeah, they've changed over the years. So tell people, and for those that might not know, so I was in politics for years and years, and I got back in 92, I started going to El Salvador with a buddy of mine from college who was originally from there, and that's kind of where I first got exposed to coffee. And I just kind of like started doing research. I thought, well, someday when I get out of politics, I'm going to get into coffee. And in 2015, I did. We had a shop over on University Avenue, and unfortunately that didn't work out so well. And now I started a second one on Rimrock Road. First one was the Fifth Element, and then Finca is still there. I'm not really involved much anymore. But for those that don't know, because you've been through this as a barista and an owner and a competitor, explain to people the nuances when I say good coffee versus you talked about dark coffee. Explain to people what that means, because you're really good at making coffee accessible.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. I try to do that. So you want me to just talk about what I think of as a good coffee?
To put it down, as Judge Weissman once said in a court trial, put it down there where the chickens could get at it.
Yeah.
Because oh, very nice. A little piano, little barista music here behind me. It's very nice there. I think that when people say, well, what's the difference between people don't understand they're truly lot of people are like, oh, coffee is just coffee, right? What is the basics of good quality coffee and what's not so good coffee?
Well, I guess the good coffee, it would start with any sort of agricultural product, like how it's grown and how it's harvested. So it starts there. So there's a little more attention to it, a little more care given with good coffee. It's usually done on a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. As opposed to a large mechanized farm or a factory farm kind of thing. And then I think as long as you're starting with good raw coffee, then you take it to the roasting step. And I think you want to roast it in sort of a way that is transparent, but also enhances the inherent quality of the coffee. Not hating on dark roast, because I think that has its place, but I think when you have a really high quality ingredient, if you roast it too hard, it's sort of the same idea as cooking a really nice cut of steak well done. Mm-hmm. So it's going to have some flavor, it's going to add some flavors, but you're also going to be covering up some flavors and sacrificing some flavors. So you've got good raw ingredient, you roast it well, and then it comes down to brewing it well. And so I guess if you nail all those things, good coffee to me is coffee where you can, to borrow a word from the wine world, you can taste the terroir in the coffee. You can taste where it was grown. You can taste maybe the varieties, the botanical varieties present. Mm. You can taste how it was processed, how it was fermented. That's kind of what I'm looking for in coffee. That's what I'm thinking of when I say good coffee.
That's a great explanation. A lot of people don't realize, wine, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it Salmonet? Or I don't always get Salmonet. What's the wine guy? The
Sommelier.
Person? Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Sommelier, yeah. That's it. Thank you.
Totally.
Young brain versus old brain. if you're a sommelier in wine, there's 160-some flavors or profiles in wine. It's the exact same thing in coffee.
Totally. And there is, it gets less coverage because it's coffee, but there is a similar... there are similar certifications in the coffee world for palate calibration and tasting and stuff like that, as there are to the Somm certification. So you've got
a Q grade cupper, you're someone who just has a wonderful palate that
can.
So it was coffee. I walked down a couple of blocks here to your shop, again, Bradbury's Coffee here in Madison, for those listening on WMDX here in Madison. This beautiful coffee by Phil and Sebastian Coffee Roasters. Where are they out of?
They're out of Calgary, Alberta.
Awesome Canadian coffee.
Yeah. They're up there where all those fires were. Earlier in the summer.
All that coffee roasting, that's all the smoke is. But this is a Danji from Ethiopia. If you look out here, it says notes of peach, jasmine, and black tea. So if you're a Q-grade cupper or a true coffee professional like you,
sure.
If you're sipping the coffee, you can actually find those notes.
Yeah, exactly. And there's some subjectivity to what you're going to taste. But I think the important thing is you have a nice coffee, you're going to be able to pick out some flavors, right? As opposed to just this has a heavy, roasty, kind of almost carbony flavor to it.
I think that's a good way to put it. But I just say burnt.
Burnt, yeah. I think I was trying to avoid that word diplomatic.
No, I always say, look, I mean, yes, I agree. There are some places for some people just like a really dark roast, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But too often I've found that, particularly at the really corporate level, what they do is buy low-grade quality coffee.
Sure.
And so to cover up those bad flavors, just like good coffee has good flavors, bad coffee has bad,
sure,
they over-roast it, they burn it, so you don't taste the bad flavors.
Yeah.
All you taste is that bitterness.
Yeah,
and that's why so many people will say, oh, I like coffee, but I got to put milk and cream in it or whatever. And you know what? That's fine.
Yeah.
But I always encourage people, you know, just try it the way the farmer or the roaster intended.
Yeah. No, I think you hit on something that's like kind of important there, is that lower quality coffee, lower grade coffee, coffee that like is scoring lower and then is selling for cheaper prices. I think that does kind of go hand in hand with like dark roasting, because it sort of has to. If you were to apply like this sort of roast profile that's on this Ethiopian coffee that you have here, which is like pretty light, pretty clear. It's going to let you taste all of those sort of origin flavors in the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to taste a lot of roast. If you were to apply that sort of roast profile to like some of these lower grade commodity grade coffees,
you wouldn't want to drink it.
You wouldn't want to drink it.
No.
Yeah.
It's just crap. I'll say it.
Yeah.
Now, here's a part of the show that was going to be spectacular. We're going to open, because coffee geeks, which I'll say at least I am. Are you okay with being called a coffee geek?
Yeah, you can call me that. Yeah.
We love to open up a new bag of coffee. And then when you open it up, I'll let you do the honors. You smell that first, first smell. And it's just like, oh my heavens.
I like to give it a little shake.
See, look at that. There's a coffee professional.
You know, since we don't have the brewing happening today.
Yeah. Oh, see? I'll see there. There you go. The crack right there. I'm going to see if I can hold it up to the... for those streaming on the... I'm going to try to hold this up to the camera here. That's not too bad. So if you're streaming on Facebook or Twitter, what have you, you don't see... It's not black and shiny. It's kind of this matte brown color on the bean. Let's try that again. And that's what we're looking for, right?
Mm-hmm.
It usually, correct me if I'm wrong, 9 times out of 10, if there's a shine on the bean, it's probably over-roasted. Probably.
I think that's true. Also, once you have those oils at the surface, they're going to oxidize and start tasting kind of funky.
That's just lovely. I mean, honestly, people probably look at it thinking, those guys are eating quote-unquote raw coffee. Well, it's not raw. It's been roasted.
Yeah.
It's just not brewed.
Yeah. You can kind of get an idea of what it would taste like brewed, though, just by chewing on it.
My filter is here so we can actually taste it.
Dang. I should have brought some backup filters just in case.
Well, you know, I went through my checklist and somehow my filters didn't get in the bag. But
that's the way it goes.
Yeah, such is life. But the point is, like, we're talking to Trevor Green, owner of Bradberry's here in Madison, Wisconsin, and a past participant in the U.S. Barista Championships. The point is that you have to, like all good agriculture, people that go to the Dane County Farmers Market or the Eau Claire Farmers Market, or I know there's the Third Ward, there's farmers down in Milwaukee. If you're going to go to a local farmers market, you want to deal with a local producer that really cares about the earth and what goes into it. Same way in coffee. It all starts at the farm. And then you can have a roaster that knows what the heck they're doing to get the best flavor profile. And, you know, a friend of mine from El Salvador, Federico, likes to say, once it gets to us, we just try not to mess it up.
Yeah, totally.
There's a lot to that, right?
Totally.
Because to me, when I was in coffee, there was kind of a lot of, when I was working with coffee of that quality, I felt a certain pressure to make sure I was presenting it the way that the farmer or the roaster did it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's something to that. The idea that it starts at the farm, and then every step after that, you're just trying to like minimize degrading the coffee.
Right? Yeah.
You're trying to preserve it.
And how important is water? Because people don't understand this.
Oh, it's insanely important. It's like the number one underestimated like factor in like making good coffee. Like, well, when I'm talking to like people who are buying bags, like non-professionals, it's like most professionals know, but... a lot of times I get questions at the cafe from people who are brewing at home or like, why can't I, like, I bought the same coffee that you served me last week and it tastes nothing like that. For brewed coffee, it's 98 for the coffee we're brewing at Bradberry's, it's 98.5, 98.6 0.6% of the coffee, because I'm actually measuring, you know, with a refractometer, our coffee strength. So the rest of that, you know, the things that are not dissolved coffee solids in the coffee, that's water.
So, if you do it at home, don't use the tap water, no matter how good your tap water might be. Either use
not like around here.
Either a zero water or a Brita or bottled, or I mean, do something where it's going to be, you know, it doesn't have the fluorides and the minerals and all that stuff in it.
I grew up in Milwaukee, and we get pretty good tap water. It's sourced from Lake Michigan. And in terms of like mineral content, it's like in a pretty good sweet spot. But even with that, you would want to pass it through like a Brita filter to get rid of like the fluoride and the chlorine kind of flavor.
Makes a huge difference.
But in Madison and other parts of the state, the water is so full of minerals that you kind of need to. What we do at the cafe is we try to strip everything out, add controlled amounts of minerals back in, and that's how we get
there.
To
is
what we
a
want.
Recipe for water. People don't understand.
Definitely
that. Back with more on the other side with Trevor Green from Bradbury's. After this, this is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 10 minutes before the hour of 3 o'clock, 10 minutes before our friend and colleague Matt Flynn takes over. Matt Flynn direct from 3 until 4. At 4 o'clock, it is the Devil's Advocates, never personal, only politics. Crudy and Dom with the Devil's Advocates. At 6 o'clock, then, the Maggie Dawn Show. And at 8 o'clock, Rick Smith Across America. And at 10 o'clock, tape delayed, our friend Robert Pilot with Native Roots Radio, the perspective of Native Americans here on Civic Media. Right now, it is Trevor Green. He is the proprietor, the owner of Bradbury's here in Madison. Go to bradburyscoffee.com. You can learn more. Bradbury's, Bradburys, bradburyscoffee.com. Always a great time. If you haven't been there before, if you live within an hour of Madison, you know you're going to get to Madison. Let's just be honest here. If you live within an hour of Madison, you're going to get here. Just go downtown. It's a beautiful walk, two blocks off the Capitol Square down North Hamilton, and stop in and see Trevor and his crew. Crepes as well. Some of the best savory and sweet crepes in the world.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah.
So, and tea. So I want to talk a little bit, Trevor, about your competition. And for those people who aren't familiar with the both national and world competitions, I equate it, you can tell me how you do, but I explained it, if you've ever seen Iron Chef America on the Food Network, it's kind of like that, only with coffee, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's pretty accurate. I also think of it as like something akin to like maybe James Beard or something like that, but in the coffee world. Because there isn't a thing like that, or like a Michelin thing for the coffee world. So I would say it's like all those things rolled into one.
Maybe. So those are familiar. I know the rules have changed the last 2 or 3 years, but it used to be out of 4 judges. You had 15 minutes and you had to create an espresso, espressos, 4 milk-based drinks and 4 specialty drinks in 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And talk about the coffee and the presentation, and you're judged on the entire thing, correct?
Correct. Yeah, yeah. So there's 7 judges total. There's 4 that are your like sensory judges. Mm-hmm. So they're the people you're serving. They're at a table, and they're evaluating how everything tastes. Then there's 2 technical judges. Mm-hmm. Those guys float around you while you're making the coffee at the machine. And so those people are looking at your consistency. They're judging you based on how much coffee you're spilling, or like how much milk you're wasting, things like that. There's one head judge who's kind of coordinating everybody. Mm-hmm. So you have like 15 minutes to kind of give this like mini TED Talk type thing.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, you're serving 12. You have to serve 12 beverages in that time. And so you're judged on things like flavor, like the sensory aspect. You're judged on the concept that you're presenting, because you usually have to put together some sort of like talk that like connects to the coffee that you're serving and some like concept that's larger than that. And then you're judged on your technique too. And then there's some overall scores about like how you're managing like the station and the presentation and the service as like a whole.
Mm-hmm. And you is it still divided up into regions in the U.S.?
I think what they do now is they have optional qualifying events, which mm-hmm. is like the first step. And then after that, I'm going to correct myself. It's the preliminary events.
That's the first tier.
Those are optional. But then you have to go to one of two qualifying events. Mm-hmm. And then based on your performance at the qualifying event, you can qualify for the national event.
And you've done very well.
Yeah, yeah. I was getting like pretty good when I like took over like owning the cafe.
Yeah.
And then that kind of sucked up all my time. But yeah,
got to the Nationals.
Yeah, the last couple times I did it, I was a semifinalist at the Nationals. Yeah. So I finished 13th and
in the country, United.
11th.
In the United States. 13th and 11th in the country, folks, out of 50 states.
Yeah, yeah. And so at those qualifying events that feed into the national competitions, they cap each of those at 50 competitors, and they tend to fill up in the first like hour or two.
He's being a little modest, I believe, because I mean it's a great honor just to participate, and even greater honor to get to the level that you did and to be, you know, literally in the top 15 baristas in the country.
Yeah.
That's pretty dang spectacular.
It took a lot of work, and it took a lot of experience.
Tell people how much work that takes.
It was my life. I mean, that's why
it sucks up everything.
That's why I stopped doing it when I started owning a cafe. It's just.
Did you ever have a coach, or did you just do it yourself?
I did. I did have a coach. I had like a team, I would say.
Okay.
You know? Not in the respect that like some competitors have like formal coaches that they like hire and they're like. Pedigreed like coffee professionals like right. that, but right. I had like kind of a crew of people that like knew me and knew what I was trying to do and right. kind of got it and had been exposed to competition enough and would let me talk at them about the rules and calibrate them mm-hmm. to help me get better.
Yeah,
It's
spectacular. And there's a one national champion, and that person that goes on and represents the U.S. There's about 60 countries every year.
Yeah.
That do the World Barista Championship, and that's one of the people that we both know, but I got involved in El Salvador and Alejandro yeah. Mendez. Well, the cool story about him is he grew up as just a poor kid, was flipping hamburgers at Wendy's, and within 4 years, he was the first person from a coffee-producing country that became the World Barista Champion
yeah.
out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And he's just a chill, cool guy, and he's still slinging coffee, you know, behind the bars down in El Salvador, and his business partner, Danny Mendez from Four Monkeys, another great guy who was a national champion of El Salvador as well. And none of they didn't come from money. You don't come from money. I mean, just it's normal people who put in this tremendous amount of work that have a passion for coffee.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it becomes your life if you want to get good at it. There is sort of like a competition season where things peak and get really mm-hmm. intense. But I think there was a number of years where my brain was just in it all the time. And mm-hmm. I was always kind of like thinking forward or thinking about competition or.
But a minute,
like that.
But a minute left, Trevor. For people at home who want to do coffee right or correctly, I mean, I've got a grinder here that's $200. I mean, you could spend a lot of money on it if you want to or can.
Sure, sure.
But just for the common person, what's your one or two things in a minute that you would say if you want to start getting the coffee the right way, what would you do?
Buy good coffee. That's mm-hmm. the huge one. Buy good coffee. Use good water. Mm-hmm. Like it's just like any other like culinary pursuit. You got to use good ingredients, and those are the two main ingredients.
Yeah.
So I'd say like you can get a long way with those two things. You don't necessarily need like fancy equipment to make good coffee.
And if you can, leave it whole bean, because once the coffee is ground, it starts to deteriorate a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. If you can get a grinder, even if it's a cheaper grinder.
I told you, even to start with, even if you go to Target yeah. and get a $15, you know, one single blade grinder.
Yeah, yeah.
That's better than, you know, buying a bag of Starbucks pre-ground.
Sure. And I think if you've never done that, starting with grinding at home is just going to open your eyes and maybe like start you down the rabbit hole.
right? It's magical. Yeah. I mean, once you get sucked in, folks, you can't go back.
Yeah, it's true.
And you have a guy like this, Trevor Green, from Bradbury's in Madison. It makes it even better. Stop on down to Bradbury's downtown Madison if you're here in town or when you're in town visiting. Trevor, a pleasure. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you, Todd.
My pleasure. Next time we'll actually have my filters. We'll make coffee.
Okay, sounds good.
Stay tuned now. Matt Flynn Direct is next. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back tomorrow. Mr. Sommers, appreciate you as well. Trevor Green, we'll see you tomorrow. This is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.